Hello, this is Rita Schulte with the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette from Thursday, August 15, 2019. We begin on page one with an article headlined "Schools Felt Pinch Over Delayed Tax Bills" by Deborah Pressey. If Champaign County's elected officials didn't know before that a delay in the property tax cycle this year had left school districts in a bind, they do now. With a new school year getting underway this week and next, superintendents from nine area districts paid a visit to a community board meeting Tuesday, two of them describing the budget hit they've sustained after 2018 property tax bills were mailed a month later than usual. As of Wednesday, Prairie View Ogden Superintendent Vic White said he still didn't have the answers from the county that he went looking for. "The county board sat and listened," he said. "We can't answer you," he said. The delay in the tax bill mailing meant first installment payments weren't due back until July 1st, a month later than usual. While some taxpayers may have welcomed an extra month to pay, that later first payment due date was also a day after school districts closed out their 2018 fiscal years, minus the property tax disbursements they had expected to get about a month sooner. County officials have said that repeatedly this year's late tax bills were a combination of two factors: new software being installed at the county level, and the State Department of Revenue being late in assigning a fiscal county multiplier needed to calculate the bills. The entire collection system was new this year, according to Amy Foster, chief deputy in the county treasurer's office. "We did our best to try and get payments in and processed as quickly as possible," she said Wednesday. "The kinks in the new software should be long resolved by next year's tax cycle," Foster said. "But the county can't guarantee the timing of next year's tax bills at this point, because we can't say whether we will get the multiplier on time," she said. Mahomet Seymour Superintendent Lindsay Hall called this year's tax cycle a debacle. "As the new fiscal year began, it's not a pretty picture for us," she said. The Mahomet Seymour District was owed just under $8.7 million in property tax disbursements in May and June and got only $4.3 million by June 30th, she said. "Not receiving that amount of property tax revenue is devastating to us," Hall said. "When it became apparent we would fall significantly short of the $8.7 million we were owed by June 30th, my Board of Education passed a resolution on June 30th so that, if necessary, we could issue tax anticipation warrants in order to pay our employees and pay our bills." Hall said she wasn't expecting answers from the county board, but she did leave the board with a question about whether superintendents can expect a delay in taxes again. She also asked county officials to do a better job of keeping tax districts in the loop. "Our experience this spring was such that we were not receiving reliable information," she said. White said this was the first time in 24 years he's seen his school district fail to receive the amount of first installment property tax money it expected on time. "School district budgets for the past year got whacked and show a deficit," he said. "If you don't know," he told the county board, "the school budget runs from July 1st to June 30th, and most of us rely heavily on the idea of early property tax money." White stressed Wednesday that he's not looking to blame anybody. He just wants an answer to this question: is this the new normal? That's a pressing issue right now, because school district fiscal 2020 budgets have to be reported to the state by September 20th. Excuse me, that's September 30th. Can he count on getting the property tax disbursements he'll need next spring, he wondered. "We just want communication. That's what we want," White said. Foster said the county is well aware of the fiscal year's ending June 30th and the need to have property tax money in hand by then. "I've been here 24 years and we've not had tax bills go out late before," she said. The treasurer's office made two tax distributions in June, with the second one being much larger than the first, Foster said. "More disbursements are forthcoming. We have done our best to try and accommodate and get as much to them as we could," she said. Joining White and Hall at the meeting were the superintendents from Unit 7 schools in Tolono, the St. Joseph Grade School District, the St. Joseph Ogden High School District, Heritage, Thomasboro, Fisher, and Gifford. And also from page one, this article headlined Farmer Says USDA Crop Estimates Are Optimistic by Ben Zigerman. This year, Illinois farmers are expected to have their worst corn crop since 1998, with production down 17% from last year, according to a report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. But the report predicts only a 4% drop nationwide, much better than what analysts had expected, which has led to a steep drop in corn prices. The corn market is down 50 cents in the last 2 or 3 days. Most market observers were expecting a lower acreage number than what the USDA came out with, said Gary Luth, who farms near Allerton. It's been an extremely rough time period for those of us who have product to sell and don't necessarily have it sold. As for his crop, he said it's a little early to tell, but he expects yields to be below average. It appears as though we were fortunate in getting our corn crop in the ground at a relatively normal time frame. It looks like the pollination occurred successfully, he said. It's up to rainfall from here forward for how the crop turns out. It could still be substantially below average, more average. As for soybeans, he said, the outlook isn't as positive. I'm looking at probably a 10 to 20% below average yield on the soybeans now, Luth said. It could get worse if we don't get rain right away. It's the typical farmer story. If it rains, we'll be okay. If not, who knows? Dirk Rice also said he's concerned about the lack of rain. It's gotten dry, he said. As I go from Philo to Urbana, and I can see we've caught a little more rain in Philo just looking at the height of the beans. They're short around my house, and by Urbana, they're very short. He said his corn is still looking decent, but we need rain to finish it off to protect yields there. Steve Hettinger, who farms over a 50-mile stretch, said his fields vary quite a bit. On the east side in the Broadlands area, we're looking pretty good. Average to above average. As it goes west, it drops off, he said. There was only a half an inch of rain in July. Overall for corn, I'm going to say we're 15 to 20% off an average year, Hettinger said. Pollination has been sporadic on his corn, he said, but there's no disasters that I can see. No 2012 drought material, but it definitely leads you to believe that the government might be a little bit optimistic about some of their numbers. As for his soybeans, he said, they're definitely going to be off. They're late. They're short, he said. There was late planting, and when we planted, it wasn't ideal. Hettinger said the fields were muddy when planted, but when the rain stopped and the ground became hard, making it difficult for the roots to penetrate into the soil. Even if this year's crop is below average, Hettinger said, he'll look forward to next year's. I'm a Cubs fan, so wait until next year. Rings loudly in my head, he says. And another page one article about from the Champaign County Housing Authority headlined A Place to Be by Deborah Pressey. Demand for the houses being built in the Bristol Place redevelopment project in North Champaign has far outstripped the supply. But for successful applicants, move-in day will be later this fall. There were more than 900 applicants for 90 single-family homes in this affordable housing development when the waiting list opened and closed in a single day earlier this month, according to Champaign County Housing Authority CEO David Northern. Not all 90 homes were up for grabs. One is reserved for an on-site manager who will pay rent, Northern said. Another 42 homes were set aside for families who were relocated from the older homes that were torn down to make way for this redevelopment. Those families have the right of first right to rent the new homes. 32 of them applied, and the other 10 will remain on the list until all homes are leased, Northern said. It's problematic because there are just a small number of units available, he said. After years of work and planning, this development along North Market Street, just north of Bradley Avenue, is on track for the first residents to move in this October, Northern said. It's moving along really well, and I'm excited about the progress, he said. The $25 million Bristol Place redevelopment is a three-way partnership between the city, the housing authority, and a private developer with the last of the older homes cleared away last year. Being built in their place are 64 single-family homes, 26 townhomes, and a community building. Some 80% of the housing units are already built, Northern said. The homes are a mix of four-bedroom, three-bedroom, and two-bedroom units, and some have two bathrooms. This redevelopment is also coming with a built-in incentive to help renters become eventual owners, because tenants will have options to buy their homes after 15 years. For those who remain compliant with leasing terms, a $2,000 per year credit from the developer will be available, up to $30,000 for 15 years, to help with the purchase cost, according to Northern. The Housing Authority will make a separate incentive of $2,000 a year available, up to 8 years, for tenants who comply with lease terms and meet certain criteria, but choose to move rather than stay and buy their homes. The money could be used to help buy a home elsewhere, Northern said, but recipients will be able to use it as they like. Our long-term goal is to have home ownership, he said. The second phase of this project, apartment units for seniors, hasn't been approved, Northern said. Work is also progressing on the Housing Authority's Haven at Marketplace project under development along Interstate Drive between Neal Street and Prospect Avenue. On the way are 98 apartment units for adults aged 55 and older, 74 of them in a three-story building and 24 in two single-story buildings for people 55 and older with special needs. The goal is to have at least some residents moving in this coming winter, Northern said. The first right to units at Haven Development will go to dozens of people relocated from Skelton Place, 302 South 2nd Street in Champaign, which was sold by the Housing Authority to Green Street Realty, he said. Here's an article headlined, Danville Police Are Asking to Register Security Cameras to Help Versus Crime, by Tracy Crane. Police are asking Danville residents and businesses to voluntarily register their exterior security cameras with the department to help officers solve crimes. In an effort to partner with our community, the camera registration program would allow officers to quickly determine where footage of a crime may be captured so they can review footage and begin the investigative process, Danville Police Commander Doug Miller said Wednesday. The department has set up a form on the city's website where residents and businesses can provide information free of charge about their exterior cameras, including the address, number of exterior cameras, and their location on buildings, how long the video is retained, whether audio is captured, and more. No one will have access to that information except police, the department said. Miller said the cameras wouldn't be used for active surveillance and officers would not have direct access to homeowners' cameras. The latter was a concern expressed by some city aldermen when police commanders first discussed the idea at a city meeting earlier this summer. As things stand now following crimes, investigators will naturally get access to security footage from the victim's property. But Miller said there are instances when a camera on another property next door or even a few blocks away catches useful information in identifying possible suspects, such as a vehicle description, license plate, or suspect description. Having those at their disposal can aid police in making an arrest or help in the investigation. It's a useful tool when it's in place and available, Miller said. It's not going to eliminate our canvassing of neighborhoods and face-to-face interaction with the public and all other investigative techniques. Miller said there would be no added cost to the police department, residents, businesses, or other property owners who voluntarily register, and it may lead to building relationships between officers and community members. Under this agreement, City Corporation Counsel Dave Wessner said a police officer seeking to review a property owner's security footage would not need a warrant to do that. Under this agreement, City Corporation Counsel Dave Wessner said a police officer seeking to review a property owner's security footage would not need a warrant or subpoena to do that. The idea is to catch the criminals sooner rather than later, he added. Miller said the registration form, located toward the bottom of the home pages of the city's website, is user-friendly. And these are the terms of use. The rules of Danville's proposed security camera registration program, which was unveiled Wednesday, are these. Registration is entirely voluntary. Registrant information is reserved for official use by the Danville Police Department. No police personnel will have direct access to a registrant's camera. Any footage containing or related to criminal activity may be collected by the police department for use as evidence during any stage of a criminal proceeding or to assist with the investigation. An individual's personal information will be kept confidential by the city unless subject to disclosure by court order. Under no circumstances should registrants construe that they are acting as an agent or employee of the city and or the police department. Under no circumstances shall the city use any information obtained to view footage or feeds directly from cameras owned by the registrants. And now moving on to Section B, the local section of the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette for August 15, 2019. An article headlined, Shooting Gives Group More to Concern It, by Aldoberto Toledo. A shooting Tuesday that left a man hurt is the 55th incident of gun violence in the city to date in 2019. A little bit high for this time of year, said Police Chief Anthony Cobb. During the Community Coalition's monthly meeting Wednesday, Cobb said the shooting that took place in the 700 block of Crescent Drive, just across the road from Centennial High School, was concerning as police continued to wind down the summer. He said this summer has seen a higher number of shootings than in years past, with 41 this time last year, 37 in the summer of 2017, and 53 and 50 respectively for 2016 and 2015. It's a little high for a five-year average, Cobb said. We're concerned about the gun violence we're seeing. Champaign County Sheriff Dustin Huerman also gave updates on a shooting Sunday morning following a party in the Dobbins Downs neighborhood. Two were shot in that incident. Luckily, the investigation is progressing, and more information should be available by the end of next week, he said. Urbana Police Chief Bryant Serafin said once the coalition's meeting last month, there have been two shootings in Urbana, both of them minimal, with a couple of bullet casings found and no injuries or property damage reported. Serafin also took time Wednesday for a show-and-tell session. He brought with him a display case filled with what appeared to be several handguns and asked members of the coalition to identify which were real and which weren't. The answer, none were real. All were realistic-looking BB guns. We used it for years and years, Serafin said of the display. When it's dark in an alley or when a young man has a BB gun, it's nearly impossible for a person to tell. When the police come, they will not respond with a BB gun. Serafin said he brought the display to the coalition because on Sunday afternoon, police were made aware of a group of teens carrying what looked like handguns. One 16-year-old, Serafin said, was ultimately found to have a BB gun that resembled a .45 caliber handgun, along with two others. On Tuesday, Serafin added, police responded again to a report of a young man with a firearm and found it was the same teenager from 2 days earlier. We asked for help from his parents and talked with them, but 2 days later it was the same exact behavior, Serafin said. This is just to make sure the community knows the things we deal with. I do not want one of our officers to shoot and kill a young person with a BB gun. Urbana Police said on Facebook they're urging parents and guardians to talk with their kids about the dangers of walking around with any type of BB or airsoft guns in their waistbands. No good can come of it. And here's a profile of Christian Mahone, who is the Southside Elementary's new principal, who was previously principal of Extreme Summer Academy in Springfield. His last name is spelled M-A-H-O-N-E. The way Christian Mahone became Southside Elementary's new principal was kind of a whirlwind. Earlier this summer, he was juggling three jobs, trading one right after the other in the Springfield School District, administrative intern at Washington Middle School, acting assistant principal of the elementary summer school, and principal of Extreme Summer Academy. For me, at the time, something was telling me there was a need for a change of pace, said Mahone. I need to fill my capacity more. A friend told him he should move to Champaign, but Mahone, who prefers the elementary level, was skeptical. There were no openings for an elementary principal at the time. Then Bill Taylor retired after 11 years at Southside. I really do think it was sent by God, Mahone said. I went out on a limb and I applied. What happened next, he said, was crazy. Literally, they called me 2 days later and they wanted me to come in and interview, he remembers. So I said, okay, when? And they said, tomorrow. At that point, I was pretty broke because I was helping my family out a lot financially. I was taking money out of my savings to put gas in my car to get back and forth because I was not going to miss out on this opportunity. I did the interview, drove home, and I was like, I feel pretty good about it. We'll see what happens. They called me back the next day. I remember it was 4:47 p.m. on the head. They said, hey, Mr. Mahone, we want to bring you back again for level two. So I was like, when? And they said, tomorrow. Imagine, I was still broke, but I made it a point to get out there. They called me back a couple of days later, and they wanted to offer me the job. I've been on the job since July 1st. Here's more from Southside Elementary's South Side of Chicago Ray's new principal. My work ethic comes from my father. He did not play no games. I have seven brothers and sisters. My dad would work two jobs, work 12, 14-hour days just to be sure there was food on the table. It could be as simple as a bologna sandwich, but he would make sure we ate. He always somehow, always, always, always had enough energy to come home and talk about, how's your day, son? How did school go today? Seeing my dad hustle and grind gave me that strong ethic I have today. And from my mom, I get a lot of my compassion, a lot of my people skills. I am still a mama's boy. I love her to the death of me. She's literally my best friend. I talk to her about everything. Sometimes she's like, son, way too much information. When I was doubting my own capabilities, it was my mom that pushed me through. One thing you should know about my parents is this year they will have been together for 37 years. A common misconception, especially where I come from, is that you don't have two parents at home, especially with black families. I have seven brothers and sisters, and we all have the same mom and dad. That's one of the things I pride myself. My dad and mom have been in my life for my entire life. Education was at the forefront of my household. Growing up, we couldn't afford to have a computer, but my dad would make sure to save enough money to have the latest edition of Encyclopedia Britannica. That was our research right there, because it wasn't always safe to walk the seven blocks to get to the public library because of all the gang activity. My parents couldn't afford to send me to college, but because my dad had put education at the forefront, I knew I had to do something to keep pushing. I knew I was smart enough to get an academic scholarship. I never liked school. I was just really, really good at it. I was like, I've got to do well in school. This is where it's at. So I was hyper-focused. My dad was recently down, and he reminded me of when we didn't have the lights on, and I would spend my last few dollars on candles, and I'd sit there and make sure I got my homework done. I knew I had to hyper-focus, and that was how I paid my way through school, scholarships. After graduating from Knox College, I student-taught in Chicago, then started my career in Galesburg. By the end of my third year in Galesburg, I was ready to move on. At the time, they didn't have many black teachers. They hired us right away, me and four of my friends, and we were all young black males. But they weren't so nice to us at all. We were doing things that 15 to 20-year vets couldn't do. We started seeing discipline numbers go down. We started seeing kids show up to school more. Things they could not do, we were able to do in our first year. The kids loved seeing us in the classroom because they saw someone who looked like them. Every year I taught in Galesburg, I was 100% the first black teacher they had and the first male teacher they had. So I was like a dynamic duo, just being me and myself. So that's why I stayed in Galesburg for that long. But opportunities for growth became minimal, and there was just not a lot of support at the district level and not a lot of support from my colleagues. My goals for Southside Elementary include definitely making sure we're closing the opportunity gap. Over the next year or so, my plan is to redo our vision, our mission for Southside. What a vision was 5, 10 years ago has to change, because over time, society changes. We've got to be in tune, cognizant and mindful, and flexible in the way that we do things. I've asked, why aren't we a blue ribbon school? That's one of my goals. Find out what it takes and start putting together those systems to be that level, because all of my teachers are high capacity. They have laid the foundation, and my job is to figure out how to elevate them and bring them to their next level. You will never catch me just literally sitting in my office, because that's not the kind of administrator I am. I don't like sitting. I'm like the Energizer Bunny. I'll be dancing with the kids. I can't do the newest dance moves, but I love to dance. That's how I keep myself energized. When it comes to heroes, I'm a huge, huge Barack Obama fan. When he won the election in 2008, there were 800 Knox College students who stormed the streets of Galesburg. We were running down Main Street. Everyone was happy to have the first black president. You'd think the motorists would be mad, but they got out and celebrated with us. One of my dreams came true. I met the president. He came to Galesburg for a commencement speech, and I said the Pledge of Allegiance before he spoke. He came around, talked to everyone after. The idea of me meeting him and shaking his hand was literally a dream come true. When I shook his hand, I was like, he's just transferred some power over to me. It was one of the most thrilling times of my life. And here's a couple of short takes from around the country. Capital One suspect tied to more data breaches. From Seattle, federal prosecutors say a woman charged in a massive data breach at Capital One may have hacked more than 30 other organizations. Paige Thomas of Seattle was arrested last month after the FBI said she obtained personal information from more than 100 million Capital One credit applications. There is no evidence the data was sold or distributed to others. In a memorandum filed ahead of a detention hearing rescheduled from Thursday to August 22nd, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Seattle said servers found in Thompson's bedroom contained data stolen from more than 30 unnamed companies, educational institutions, and other entities. From San Antonio, Texas, a dig at the Alamo turns up musket balls. An archaeological dig at the Alamo to help preserve the historic Texas mission has unearthed musket balls that experts say could date to the 1800s. The San Antonio Express News report, the survey of all mission area west wall of the Long Barrack is meant to help determine how best to protect the oldest component of the Alamo. Crews are digging for pits to help explore the 1700s limestone wall to its foundation in an effort to fight moisture. Archaeologist Christy Nichols said workers so far have recovered musket balls, a mid-1800s bottle, and tin glazed majolica from the Spanish colonial period. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette from August 15, 2019. Please stay tuned.